Welcome to International Edition, our new program, taking a closer look at stories of the day, social media, and entertainment. I'm Susan Yockey in Washington. Ahead, control of the Iraqi city of Ramadi. What social media has to say about the conflict. Cyber espionage with The Great Cannon. And the 2015 Billboard Music Awards.
I love you so much more than I'll ever be able to say to you. Thank you so much.
It's all ahead for you, coming up right here, coming up next on The Voice of America. Islamic State forces claim control of the Iraqi city of Ramadi, but the U.S. says pro-government forces will regain the provincial capital. Well, following this really fluid situation is our own reporter, Victoria Mackey, and she's joining us right now. Thanks for joining us, Victoria.
Thanks for having me.
Always nice to have you. What is the latest in this conflict? Because it's hard to keep up with what's going on.
It is moving very quickly. The latest, I just actually got off the phone with our Kurdish service here at VOA. They have been in touch with folks on the ground. The last news that we've got is that both Iraqi tribesmen and military forces who kind of fled from Ramadi yesterday are regrouping on the outskirts of the city, and really right now just waiting for the Shiite militias that helped them into Crete and retake Crete arrive and potentially help them do a counteroffensive in Ramadi.
Well, do we know who has control? Really?
Islamic State seems to have pretty full control. If it's not 100%, it's very, very close of Ramadi. I believe there are still some civilians, from what I've been seeing in reports. There are still some civilians, unknown how many, thousands have fled the city. So, again, situation is very, very much in flux.
And U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, even though he's nowhere near the neighborhood, he's had a few words about the fighting today.
Right. I believe from South Korea, he said that he's confident that they're going to be able to retake Ramadi. And, you know, ultimately this ongoing idea of getting Islamic State completely out of Iraq. But obviously, when you've got something like Ramadi, which is really a victory in Islamic State's camp right now, it's hard to see how that's going to happen anytime soon.
How involved is the U.S. in all this fighting?
I know that they've been supporting kind of tangentially, but I mean, on the ground, it's really just Iraqi. You know, you've got the tribes and the Sunni militias and the Shiite militias and the Iraqi military. I mean, that's who it really comes down to.
And the U.S. public really does not want us getting back involved in a war in that nation.
Right. I mean, all along, it's been, you know, let's avoid putting boots on the ground. And we saw in Syria over the weekend, special forces did go in for a ground operation, but it's been very, very limited in the fight against Islamic State.
Right. What is the importance of Ramadi? Maybe you could explain that to us.
I mean, Ramadi at this point, it's just very close to the capital of Baghdad. I mean, it's even closer than Tikrit. You've got, you're 100-some kilometers away from the capital of the country right now. This really seems like as close as Islamic State has been able to get. What we're hearing from the sources on the ground is that the militias and the military are trying to get in between the city of Ramadi, where Islamic State has its strong presence right now, and Baghdad, primarily just to prevent the Islamic State from advancing towards the capital.
Well, meanwhile, there was a little good news today. I read in your copy today that a little good news about a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Right, in Palmyra in Syria. Everyone was really concerned. Islamic State has definitely taken upon itself to destroy a lot of art and ancient artifacts and ruins in their campaign across Syria and Iraq. So once they started approaching in the last few days the ancient town of Palmyra in central Syria, there was grave concern for these ruins that are, humongous tourism site back when Syria had a good, tourism flow. But the Syrian forces were able to push them back. There's still clashes on the outskirts of the area, so we're not in the clear yet, but it looks like they weren't able to damage any of the ruins there.
And we've seen those terrible pictures of them taking sledgehammers to these antiquities.
Exactly. No, I mean, I don't think that they have any qualms about destroying any of this, Syria's great culture that drew, so many people before this all started.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
That's VOA reporter Victoria Maki, and she's right here with me in the Washington studios. Is also reporter Michael Libin, and he has a look at what is being said today in social media. And Michael, let's start off with the good news for Victoria, and her article is how's it doing on the web?
Hi, Susan. Thanks. Yes, Victoria Maki's latest web report about Ramadi is the top story right now on the VOA English homepage. It was published a short time ago with the headline "Shiite Militias Set Course for Ramadi After IS Victory." Now, it's already got a comment from a VOA reader who goes by the name of Mean Bill, based in the U.S. The reader makes a reference to the fact that the Iraqi government, a U.S. ally, is partnering with Iran-backed Shiite militias to try to reclaim Ramadi. And, of course, those Shiite militias are not an ally of the United States. So Mean Bill has a warning, presumably for the U.S., saying, "Beware of the ally that also sits with an ally that is your enemy. Does that ally really want the same thing that the Iraqi government wants?"
And what is the situation on the Facebook page? What are they saying over there?
Well, on the Voice of America Facebook page, we have raw video of Iraqi forces fleeing Ramadi on Sunday. Our Facebook fans also have been commenting on that post. One of them is Ashfaq Kadir Nagu, who lives in Indian-controlled Kashmir in a town called Baramulla. He says, "I don't know what ISIS is, but one thing is clear. Whatever is being destroyed socially, economically, or politically, the U.S. is directly as well as indirectly responsible. The war against terrorism is a medium the Americans used to steal resources from different countries." Well, now, the U.S., would respond to a criticism like that by saying that it's not stealing anything from Iraq. In fact, it's been helping Iraq at the request of the government to fight the Islamic State with the use of American warplanes and also several thousand ground personnel advising Iraqi forces. Well, we had another comment from India, this time from Abhishek Chatterjee. He's in the town of Shiohar in eastern India's Bihar state. This reader thinks the United States should do more to help the Iraqis. He says, "America is not serious in its campaign against the barbaric ISIS. It is more symbolic than anything else." Well, we also have a third comment on that post from Facebook user Felix R. Sanchez. He wrote, "Overthrow one tyrant, and then you get this mess." Well, by tyrant, he may be referring to Saddam Hussein, whom a U.S.-led coalition overthrew in 2003. Well, we'd invite more of you to share your thoughts about the Islamic State seizure of Ramadi and how the Iraqi government and its U.S. allies have been handling the situation. Look for Voice of America on Facebook, like us, and post a comment, and we may read it on the air in this show. You can also find us on Twitter. Our main account is at VOA News. That's all one word. Follow us there to get the latest headlines into your Twitter feed. You can also, of course, let us know what you think about our stories by replying or mentioning at VOA News in your tweets.
Well, thank you, Michael, for stopping by. Always nice to have you here and getting an insight into social media, your area.
Thanks, Susan.
Okay, that's reporter Michael Libin reporting from our studios. You're tuned.
This is Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Some graduating secondary school students who plan to attend college may opt to wait and take a year off before they actually enroll for classes. Parents concerned that their young student may have difficulty readjusting to academic life after a year off often discourage these pre-college sabbaticals. But the findings in a new study by researchers at the Academy of Finland found that taking a year off between high school and college does not weaken a young person's enthusiasm to study, nor does it impact their overall academic performance once the college term begins. The researchers found that those who do begin their college education immediately after secondary school graduation were more resilient in their studies and more committed to their study goals. But on the other hand, the study also showed that these young people tend to be more stressed than those who wait a year. And that's your Science in a Minute.
You're tuned to International Edition on the Voice of America, where we've just started a new program. We're covering entertainment and social media, and we're also taking a look at some of the stories of the day, taking a deeper look, talking to analysts, experts, and our own correspondents in the area. We'll have more for you today, coming up after a short break.
Here's the news. Shiite militias are headed to the outskirts of the Iraqi city of Ramadi on Monday after Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi called for support in the aftermath of an Islamic State victory there. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry denounced North Korea Monday for repressing internet freedom for its citizens and condemned the communist country for last year's hacking attack on Sony Pictures in Hollywood. Following episodes of racially charged unrest that brought militarized troops onto the streets of Ferguson, Missouri and Baltimore, Maryland, the U.S. government is imposing new federal restrictions on some military-style equipment for local law enforcement. And Amtrak trains began rolling early Monday on the busy Northeast Corridor that includes Boston, New York, and Washington. It was the first time in almost a week the service has been fully operational there. I'm Bob Doty.
Coming up on International Edition, cyber espionage with the great Cannon and results of the 2015 Billboard Music Awards. As the World Wide Web has evolved and grown more complicated, so have the tools and techniques of cyber espionage and military action. Perhaps nowhere is this evolution more clearly seen than in China's recent disclosed Great Cannon and its similarities to a tool reportedly possessed by the United States known as Quantum. Depending on how they are wielded, both can serve as a high-tech tool for spies, intimidating weapons of cyber assault, or a combination of both, analysts say. VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard has been looking into the growing weaponization of the web and joins us now here in the studio. Hey, Doug. Always good. Nice to have you.
Always good to be here.
Hey, first, what is this Great Cannon and how does it work?
So no doubt many have heard about the so-called Great Firewall of China. This has been around for probably about 15, 20 years, and it's a mesh, a series of various filters and other devices that really try and sift out websites that Chinese officials don't want people in China going to. So a great example is, for example, the New York Times. Several years ago, the New York Times ran a set of stories that were not so complimentary to the Chinese leadership and their families, and the New York Times has been a website non grata, in effect. So the Great Firewall is this extensive series of meshes that filters out traffic from getting into China. Now, what the Great Cannon does is it uses that same mesh of filters, but for a very different purpose. So what it does is it takes incoming traffic, unencrypted incoming traffic to China, and again filters it out. And if it finds some of those key trigger words people looking for, it takes that traffic and then directs it in a concentrated and sustained denial of service attack at any target that it wants. So they call it a great cannon. You could almost think of it as a laser. It's taking, sort of diffuse bits of data and then focusing them in on an adversary to bring the website down.
Like, you mean if a newspaper was sending an article that the Chinese government didn't approve of, they could shoot all this information back at the newspaper?
Or any select target that it wants. And really what they were doing when they first started using it is they were taking people just searching Baidu. Baidu's, probably the largest web service in China. People just searching for, all kinds of various bits of information. It took some of those searches that it didn't necessarily want people to get the responses to, and it targeted them specifically in the case when it was just operated in March. It focused it at two websites, one greatfire.org, which is an anti-censorship site and effort, and the other is a Mandarin version of the New York Times.
Well, how do you defend against this thing?
There's really only one way, and it's not even foolproof. The ultimate answer is all of your web traffic from the point, what they call end to end, the point where it leaves your computer to the point where it goes to where you want to get it to, needs to be encrypted. At this point, the Great Cannon, like the Great Firewall, can't search for those encrypted email messages or search requests because obviously all that information is hidden. But as we know, most people don't encrypt, and so that basically leaves just about anybody open.
So now there's this thing called Quantum. It sounds like a James Bond movie.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
So Quantum is a program. It's actually a set of programs that are allegedly operated by the NSA. Now, I say allegedly.
That's the National Security Agency.
Yes. I say allegedly because these come from data and files that were leaked by Edward Snowden. So people who've been looking into this are reasonably certain that Quantum exists. So what Quantum is, it's slightly different. It uses various techniques. I'll just refer to them as injection. So what it can do is it can take, again, unencrypted web traffic. It can inject all kinds of sort of mean bits of information or data in there to trick the end user. So you might, in effect, think you're going to, say, voanews.com, and you put in the search, and a website pops up, and it looks like voanews.com, but it's not. It's a complete phony. So the NSA is building basically phony websites, redirecting traffic, and then also using this injection, injecting little bits of malware into your computer that allows them to snoop around your emails, your databases, your activities, all kinds of things.
Speaking of voanews.com, you've got a story on there about all this.
We do. It's called, I think the title is, U.S.-China Possess New Cyber Weapons, which sort of says it. And I think really that kind of strikes at the core of what we were looking at here, is to what degree are these tools of censorship, are they spying tools, or are they, you know, really military weapons? One of the researchers I spoke with, the co-author of the report that initially uncovered the Great Canon, he said these are expressly tools of aggression. They may serve some ancillary purpose in terms of censoring sites governments don't want or spying on people, but really these are aggressive tools that are used, you know, in military-like attacks.
Well, thank you, Doug, for coming by. It's always interesting.
Thank you.
That's VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard right here with me in our Washington studios. You're listening to VOA.
This is Greenbeat.
As part of her job, Forgetcha Maria dresses in a gray and black costume to nurture wattled crane chicks in a wetland enclosure in South Africa.
I'm a chick mommy, and I look after the birds.
Wattled cranes used to be commonplace throughout South Africa, but the species is now listed as vulnerable. So the Usher Conservation Center in KwaZulu-Natal collects abandoned eggs for incubation. When the chicks arrive, they are nurtured by a crane mother, complete with a hand puppet beak. Laura Jordan is a manager at the Usher Conservation Center.
The chick mums are vital for getting the right exercise. Because the species has long legs, it's really important they grow up strong. Otherwise, they won't make it to adulthood.
The foundation's efforts seem to be paying off, with the count of wattled cranes now up more than 50% in South Africa. For VOA's Greenbeat, I'm Rebecca Ward.
Last night was a huge night for music as the Billboard Awards took center stage in the U.S. city of Las Vegas. VOA Music's Nikki Strong is here to fill us in on what went down. And Nikki, this is the first time you and I have worked together. I want to welcome you.
Thank you so much.
Very nice to meet you.
I appreciate it.
So what's all the hype about?
Okay, well, Taylor Swift dominated the night. The show kicked off with the premiere of her new video, Bad Blood, which depicted this cool, futuristic world of kick-butt female assassins, many of whom were fellow celebrities, so that was cool. And then from there, the night belonged to her. She took home 8 awards, including Top Artist, Top Female Artist, Top Billboard 200 Artist, and what was really cool was how she attributed much of her success to her fans.
To the fans that I talk to online and the ones I see at the shows. I love you so much more than I'll ever be able to say to you. Thank you so much.
I also think one of the sweetest acceptance speeches of the evening came from Meghan Trainor when she won for her song All About That Bass.
No, my mom and I looked at each other and she held my hand because I was like, it's okay, Mom, I'm not going to get these. And she was like, it's okay if you don't get them. And then literally they said All About That Bass. And I was like, we looked at each other like, what? Oh, gosh, I have to go up there now. And then the crowd was so loud, I couldn't even speak. They were just, it was amazing. I don't even know how to explain it.
It was pretty cool. Megan did well. Swift took home the most trophies, followed by Sam Smith, Iggy Azalea, and Pharrell, who each won 3 awards. Sam Smith took home the coveted Top New Artist. Iggy Azalea won the Top Rap Artist and Top Rap Song for Fancy, beating out Nicki Minaj in both categories. Scandal. And Pharrell won Top R&B Song for Happy. No surprise there. But he beat out Beyonce for Top R&B Album and Artist of the Year. So I know, kind of scandalous too. I don't know if the Beehive would really appreciate that. But
well, I like that bass song, though. That's
I like it too.
Tell me about this. How was Kanye West? You know, he's gotten into some trouble in the past.
Kanye West. Now, I think he was really like the biggest loser of the evening because his performance was a mess. I'll tell you why. He closed out the show, but because there was so much profanity in his performance, they had to bleep out like at least a minute of it. And then on top of that, the pyrotechnics were so intense and overwhelming, we couldn't see him. So as watching the awards from someone on television, you know, for someone who's watching from the television, we couldn't see him. And we couldn't hear him. So it was really a fiasco. It was kind of comical, but not in a good sense.
Well, you know, you would have thought he would have thought about that bleeping bit part. But how was a tribute to B.B. King? I mean, that's a sad story there.
Well, you know, B.B. King, the Billboard Awards last night positioned itself as a night of historic first and memorable moments. So like Iggy Azalea and Britney Spears performing their song Pretty Girls for the first time on stage, the first time Mariah Carey sang on the Billboard Awards in 7 years. So in light of following through on that promise, the tribute to B.B. King was really shallow and disappointing. It was a quick paragraph, a picture, and a shot of a guitar sitting on the stage.
Maybe they'll do something more on another occasion, you know?
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Nikki, for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure being here.
Okay, that's Nikki Strong with the VOA Music Division. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, come on by our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab. It's in the upper right-hand corner. And then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is concerned about the treatment of political prisoners in Belarus. On May 4th, former presidential candidate Nikolai Statkevich was sentenced to harsher prison conditions and increased security measures for alleged violations of prison rules. Mr. Statkevich is serving a 6-year sentence related to his participation in peaceful protests following the December 2010 presidential elections. The United States is also concerned by the April 30th denial of Mikolai Ziadok's appeal of a February court decision that extended his prison term by 1 year for alleged prison rules violations. Mr. Ziadok was scheduled to be released in March 2015. In response to international pressure, President Alexander Lukashenko's government has released some political prisoners. For example, between January and September 2011, and again in August and September 2012, Belarusian authorities released, pardoned, or reclassified the offenses as less serious for several of the detainees facing riot charges from events following the December 2010 election. According to the Department of State's annual country reports on human rights practices and non-governmental organization reports, many of them had to admit guilt as a condition of their release. In April 2012, Belarusian authorities released former opposition presidential candidate Andrei Sannikau and his aide, convicted in connection with the peaceful protests in 2010. But according to the State Department and NGO reports, once released, such individuals remain subject to police supervision, and their civil and political rights are not fully restored. Some have also been forbidden, without explanation, from leaving Belarus. The United States renews its call on the government of Belarus to release all political prisoners immediately and unconditionally, and to restore fully their political and civil rights.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage, at www.voanews.com/editorials.